Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to talk now about a difficult subject, a problem that afflicts college campuses across the U.S., and most recently here in the Boston area. At issue, sexual assault and how colleges respond to reports of sexual assault on their campuses.
The most recent cases involve two women at Emerson College in Boston who claim they were sexually assaulted, one of them on the Emerson campus, the other at an MIT frat party. The students say Emerson College administrators took weeks to investigate their claims, and in one of the cases told the alleged victim that she shouldn't be making a big deal about it.
The women have filed a complaint with the Federal Department of Education claiming the school mishandled their cases. Emerson College administrators have pledged to improve their response to allegations of sexual assault on campus. But this is hardly an isolated case. Just last year at Amherst College in Western Mass, a student wrote an op-ed in her student newspaper about being raped and claimed college administrators tried to dissuade her from reporting it.
And according to research funded by the Department of Justice, one out of five college women have been or will be sexually assaulted on campus. All colleges and universities that receive federal money are required to have clear policies to respond to sexual assault allegations, but many victim advocates say the schools fall short.
So listeners, are colleges and universities doing enough to respond to allegations of rape or sexual assault on campus? Have you had experience with this? Tell us your story. We'd like to hear from you. You can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And joining us now to talk about the allegations against Emerson College is one of the students we mentioned. She's she's Jillian Doherty. She is a junior at Emerson. And Jillian, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, I appreciate how difficult this is to talk about. You reported to Emerson College back in March that a student had raped you in his dorm room a year ago. Tell us what happened after you reported that to Emerson College.
Well, I initially reported it in an email as part of a letter writing campaign hosted by Sarah Tedesco. It was just
Sarah Tedesco being the other student that's
yes.
involved, who has also claimed that she was raped.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
So we got together at that point. I sent in an email to President Pelton, Dave Hayden, other people who would be relevant to the subject. And I just said at the end of the letter writing campaign, you know, how you copy and paste something. I wrote that I, too, was raped on campus by an Emerson student and that I would like my my statistic to go into the school's crime log. So I unofficially reported it then. And then I was followed up by an email from the conduct office, and they just wanted to talk to me, and that's when I officially reported it.
Right. And so since you've officially reported it, what has Emerson done in response to this claim, to this report that you put in?
Well, there was an investigation, and because of the violent nature of the attack, they granted a hearing. The hearing was held over Skype over the summer because what happened was my attacker was studying abroad, so there was no way that we could have a hearing until he got back, which was the week of finals. So in order for us to have a hearing, like at the end of the year, I would have to stay for an extra week, but my mental health was just not allowing it. So I went home, and my other two options were to have a Skype hearing or to have the hearing this fall. But because I didn't want to deal with it this fall, I opted for the Skype hearing.
Right. So the Skype hearing, so you're on Skype, he's on Skype, and they're questioning both of you. How did that work?
It was very strange. I couldn't see him, but I could see the board. The board could see both of us. The board asked us to email questions that we would like to ask the other, and then they would ask us individually after looking over the questions and making sure they were appropriate, I guess. I asked him one question. He asked me one question. It was very small, and they didn't really go over what any of the evidence. They didn't ask us questions. They didn't, you know, clarify anything. It was very cut
now,
and dry.
Now, it's my understanding that the administrators found the student who you alleged to have raped you as not responsible, correct?
Yes, correct.
So what would you have liked to have seen happen? What should have happened? What should Emerson have done?
During the hearing, he actually changed his testimony from not remembering the attack. He actually drank so much that night that he didn't actually remember. That was his first testimony. But then he changed his testimony to remembering walking me out and saying goodbye to me. So because he changed his testimony, I was quite rattled.
Yeah. Right. So the story changed.
Yeah. So the story changed and everything changed and it kind of just went under the belt of everything.
So, Julian, tell me about the complaint you filed with the Federal Department of Education. You're essentially suggesting that your rights have been violated by Emerson. Tell me more about that. What's the nature of this claim with the Department of Education?
The nature of the claim is that our cases... our cases that were handled, because it's hard for any victim to come and say that they were raped or assaulted. So The people who did report, i.e. Sarah and I and others that I may not know of course, our cases were so mishandled and treated with such insensitivity and you know, nothing was really very thorough. All the interviews done by the conduct board were very unthorough, very ambiguous, and it was just not enough. It was not enough to support my claim. So I don't think they did enough to investigate, and I think that perhaps the administration that conducted my investigation should have a lot more training. Maybe be more qualified to handle a rape case, something that's so traumatic and something that will greatly alter the lives of both people involved, you know.
So let me ask you about the response from Emerson College. And by the way, we reached out to Emerson College early this morning. Mm-hmm. We had hoped to have President Lee Pelton on the show or someone from the college. We were told that no one would be available to join our program. Emerson President Lee Pelton did send a campus-wide letter back in March saying that he had launched a review of the school's sexual assault support programs and its adjudication process. And last week, he said that the college can and will do better. He noted that the college has been working with students to create a so-called culture of consent in which students understand they need to have clearly expressed and mutual consent before engaging in sexual activity. He's also working to create a campus-wide advocacy group to provide more effective response and support for students. How does that sound to you? Does that move closer to what you would like to see Emerson do?
No, because I feel that that letter was in vain. I think that in March they should have fixed everything. If there were problems back then, why didn't we fix it back then? Mm-hmm. I don't understand, because I reported right before that letter was sent out. So I don't understand why my case was so mishandled. If this is true, that, you know, they did go over the adjudication process and make sure that everything was, you know, working well. So if we could, why didn't we? And a lot of the programs that were instilled, a lot of the policies, you know, rewriting the student sexual assault handbook, that was done by Emerson Stopping Sexual Assault, which was created by Sarah Tedesco and I. So we almost felt like they were taking, you know, a lot of the credit for what we were trying to do on campus, and that, you know, they were just... you know, trying to respond with, we'll fix it, but it didn't, you know, if you could fix it, why didn't you before you hurt so many other people?
Listeners, we're talking to Jillian Daugherty. She's a junior at Emerson College. She's filed a civil rights complaint against Emerson College, claiming the school violated her rights in the way they handled allegations of sexual assault against her. Jillian, stand by if you want. I want to introduce a couple of other people into this conversation. Let's turn now to Tyler Kincaid. He's an associate editor at the Huffington Post. He's done a lot of reporting on sexual assaults on college campuses. He was the first to break this story about Emerson College, and he joins us from Argo Studios in New York. And Tyler, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
And thanks for having me.
Also with us is Daniel Carter. He's the director of 32 National Campus Safety Initiative, an organization that focuses on campus safety. And Daniel Carter, good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Tyler, let me start with you. How common are the kind of allegations that we just heard Jillian outline? What do you see out there? Put this in some kind of broader context.
So the office at the Department of Education that received this complaint handles a wide variety of civil rights complaints. They tell me that issues relating to sexual misconduct and sexual assault are a pretty small minority of the overall cases. However, these sorts of complaints have become more common over the past year, I think largely due to the connecting that a lot of these sexual assault survivors have done online. It's sort of like this underground online network, and they're seeing that a lot of their stories are the same, and so it's almost like in a way, it's like a letter writing campaign that they can sort of copy paste in a sense for each other's complaints, because a lot of times they're complaining about the same sort of things, that the school was dragging their feet, that the school found my attacker not responsible, but there was this evidence that clearly suggested that he was more than likely guilty. And so it's become more common, and I think that colleges are paying more attention to this. It doesn't mean that they're actually getting better, but it is becoming a larger issue and entering the national dialogue more and more.
Yeah. And Daniel Carter, the same question to you, more or less. How persuasive, how pervasive are the problems like those Jillian Daugherty just laid out for us based on her experience? Is this a common story that we hear out there?
Tragically, this is all too common, and NPR was actually part of a series of investigative stories that ran in 2009 and 2010 that documented extensive, just how pervasive this was across the country. And currently, as of the last information that I have, the Office for Civil Rights has no fewer than 24 open sexual violence complaints involving colleges and universities. But those are just the ones where they've opened investigations. We know that Ed and Tyler has covered this extensively, and this really began at Amherst College last year, is that students have, come together across social networking and social media and really started sharing information and sharing resources, so there have been dozens of complaints. Just like the ones at Emerson across the country.
And Daniel, there are federal laws on the books requiring universities and colleges to report sexual assault. What do those laws say? What are the requirements? And in general, how are universities and colleges complying with them? How well are they complied with?
Well, there are two primary laws. There's Title IX, which is best known for gender equity in collegiate athletics, but also prohibits sexual harassment, of which sexual assault is an extreme form, and their institutions have to promptly and equitably respond and remedy the hostile environment. And among other things, that includes investigating and having trained personnel to investigate and handle conduct proceedings. Now, there's also the Federal Cleary Act, which is the Campus Sexual Assault Victims Bill of Rights, which earlier this year the president signed into law. Amendments to that, known as the Campus Sexual Violence Elimination Act, which significantly enhanced those rights. For example, there will now be a requirement that hearings be conducted by officials who receive not less than annual training on the issues related to domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, and stalking, and how to conduct an investigation and hearing process that promotes the safety of victims and promotes accountability. So the law is designed to strengthen the existing law and help fill those gaps that we're talking about so that this will be less likely to happen in future cases.
And Daniel, I'm going to ask you about the response from Emerson, because in looking at this statement from President Lee Pelton, one of the things he writes in here is incidents of sexual assault are often highly complex and difficult to resolve in college communities that do not benefit from the investigatory and adjudicative resources available in criminal legal proceedings. Does that suggest, or does it raise the question, that ultimately colleges and universities are unable to handle these kinds of allegations? I mean, is it better to let the police in here?
Well, and I think certainly there's room for both. Mm-hmm. But the key is, in order to provide a safe learning environment under federal law, colleges and universities have an obligation to investigate and respond to these cases. And they are capable of doing it. It just requires that they have a certain amount of training and commitment to being sensitive, you know, and part of it's sensitivity. Part of it's being properly trained on how to investigate and understand the psychological and evidentiary issues involved. And that training is not overly complex. It's just that many institutions have not actually undertaken that process yet. And it is actually something that I think can be readily addressed.
Hmm. Tyler, let me ask you.
If the institutions are willing to do it.
Sure, if the institutions are willing to do it. Tyler, in your reporting, what did you find in terms of how Emerson responded to these allegations and how that response compares to other universities?
Emerson didn't really want to talk with me for the story. They put out the statement pretty quick the day after our story ran, addressing the issue to the community. They aren't, you know, by any means abnormal compared to the other complaints. And, you know, I would argue I've seen other complaints that have been have had, you know, much more widespread issues and problems in dealing with this. But it's kind of like what you were asking with Daniel, is that it's, you know, even if they want the police to handle it, it's a matter of, if you think about Emerson, it's a pretty small school. So, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to run into, if you have someone who assaulted you, you're going to run into that person on campus. You're likely going to see him in a campus building, in a residence hall, possibly in a classroom. And that does stir a lot of, you know, kind of PTSD, some emotional issues, and that interferes with the learning environment. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as it being complex, you know, the schools have these, you know, they're dealing with young students who are still learning, who are, in some cases, you know, literally teenagers, and they're, you know, likely drinking alcohol because alcohol is involved in a lot of these cases, you know. But for Massachusetts, under Massachusetts state law, if a person knows that the other person is intoxicated to the level that they cannot coherently consent to sexual intercourse, you know, that is sexual assault. And so it doesn't matter if it's complex and the student might not have known that it wasn't that this under the law was sexual assault. It's kind of like what Campus Save that Daniel was mentioning is supposed to address, that they need to do a better job of educating what consent means and how to have healthy sexual relations.
Jillian, I want to come back to you because when Tyler was talking about the difficult and sensitive situation that someone in your position finds herself in the wake of a sexual assault on campus, you were nodding your head in a sort of knowing way. Can you respond a little bit to that?
Of course. Well, first of all, under my circumstances, because my attacker was held responsible, he is on campus this semester, and I have run into him. He glared at me. I was with my girlfriend, and I was I freaked out, and I was hysteric on Boylston Street. I mean, I ran down to somewhere where he couldn't find me. I mean, it was awful. I mean, I've been struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder for a long time now, and you know, it's not getting better with all of these new hearings. And
are you getting the kind of counseling that would obviously be helpful to someone in your situation from Emerson, for example?
That's another thing that I found really awful about Pelton's email, is that he says that the counseling and wellness center is you know, a really good resource, and it is. You know, there are counselors there to help you, but ask any Emerson student, you can't get an appointment unless it's every other week. As someone with PTSD, you need to see a therapist at least twice a week to be, you know, functional. And, you know, furthermore, I was put on academic probation as a result of my, you know, PTSD and the investigation, because that was all in the same semester. And at the end of the semester, there was also the Boston bombing. So I'm on academic probation because not only did I have to drop a class, but I also got an incomplete in one class. So,
well, Daniel Carter, let me come back to you, because listening to Jillian's story, I mean, one of the things that comes out of this is the question of what kind of support is necessary on campuses, and is that support there in your view in general? Is it there?
It varies widely, and one of the things we're doing at the initiative is developing a series of questionnaires for both institutions and students that will help assess whether or not they have these resources in place, such as offices and personnel committed to prevention of sexual violence and responding to sexual violence, and the frequency with which mental health services can be provided. These are exactly the types of questions that the 32 National Campus Safety Initiative plans to address. And eventually, we hope to inspire more institutions to offer the services necessary to meet these needs so that these problems will not continue to plague higher education, because they are probably the single biggest challenge that higher ed faces today.
All right. Well, on that difficult articulation of that difficult challenge, we're going to leave it there for now. Daniel Carter is director of 32 National Campus Safety Initiative, which focuses on campus safety. Tyler Kincaid, associate editor at the Huffington Post, who broke the story about Jillian Doherty and Jillian Doherty Jr. at Emerson College. Thank you for coming in, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And gentlemen, thank you for joining us as well. And listeners, we do have links to the 2010 investigative series on campus sexual assaults by NPR. That's at radioboston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, the music of piano player Matt Savage. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.